You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system up to a 313-mile range and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer. David Faber has the morning off. First day of April and Q2 as markets process news on infrastructure, tax policy, some mixed news on vaccines. Jobless claims run a bit hot ahead of Jobs Friday tomorrow when stocks are closed. Our roadmap begins with the new month. Stocks are set for a higher open. Plus, Pfizer says its vaccine lasts at least 6 months and protects against variants. And AMC CEO Adam Aron joins us exclusively this hour to talk about movie theaters and the reopening. Jim, so I guess we'll start with what the president said yesterday about infrastructure. I know you've been writing already this morning about semis and our spending and Russia's spending and China's and so forth.
Well, look, I really think that when you take a look at what the president said was one of the biggest challenges, climate change and then basically blunting China. And when I spoke to Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo, she said the same thing. We need to blunt China. We need to get more competitive, hence why they're putting some money toward semiconductors. But this would be just a $50 billion, very minor part versus so much that's dedicated not to highways, but to EV, to electric vehicles. And a lot of that, Carl, it is kind of shocking. 2% of new cars are EV, 1% of all vehicles. We are really behind a lot of countries. And I think that this could, I was saying to the secretary, don't we have enough companies that are doing SPACs in EV? But it looks like we don't. We're not doing that well. And so a lot of the companies that are in that chart, including QuantumScape, which just met a fantastic milestone with Volkswagen, are very interesting. Romeo Power missed quarter really badly, so I'm not going to count on them. Nikola missed quarter very badly. Lordstown, God, that's actually all. Three out of five missed the quarter badly. Yeah. But you know what? Maybe, Wow, that was stunning. But I do think that that EV is really important because we are very far behind other countries.
There's some headlines this morning about the White House asking the EPA to look into credit policy to see what kinds of credits might be generated by some of this. And this is what the Commerce Secretary told Jim last night on Mad Money.
This is about outcompeting China. We need to invest in America, invest in American manufacturing capacity, invest in American workers and skill, get back into the business of investing in basic research where we have fallen behind. If we act now, we can't dilly-dally. Let's take action. We will compete with China.
Jim, you mentioned capacity spending on semis. Already, Taiwan semis out today saying they're going to spend $100 billion over 3 years. We know what Intel's spending, about $20. Samsung's another $100 billion. Micron last night talking about a relatively bullish forecast, and we'll get to some of the target increases. Yeah. But Taiwan semi's been running 100% for about 12 months.
They have to. Micron was, I felt very, circumspect about being able to find more capacity. I know that they're interested in a Japanese company that makes NAND, makes flash. The first time we heard that flash could be in short supply. We know DRAMs are in short supply, hence one of the reasons Micron's up. You know, it all comes back to Lam Research, and it comes back to KLA Tencor. It comes back to Applied Materials. We don't have enough companies. Those are all American companies. We own the IP. Secretary Raimondo does not want the IP to go to China. But I would point out that the president starts out with the interstate highway. And President Eisenhower got the interstate highway through because we needed missiles to be able to go from one place to another because of the Russians. And I find it's almost like you could substitute what President Eisenhower said and put about Russia and put in China. I mean, this is there are a lot of people who felt that President Trump, Peter Navarro, were tough on China. This is much tougher. This is really basically saying, look, we got to be better than China. And that's what we're going to be. The president, President Trump wanted to have more spending here. That's not what they're talking about. I mean, this is Cold War chatter. I want to say chatter, not point blank, but right at the same time, you had the CEO of Boeing go to the Chamber of Commerce and say, we need these orders from China. So, I mean, there is, business doesn't like this, but boy, the President Biden is very, very tough on China. I thought that, CEO Calhoun was really kind of saying, geez, we're going down the wrong path here.
Yeah, Calhoun was pretty outspoken yesterday at the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
But speaking of the Chamber of Commerce, Jim, that's just one organization that is seems to be dead set against any kind of hike in the corporate tax rate. We heard from them this morning. We heard from Business Roundtable last night, FedEx, a number of senators who say this is really just a means of raising corporate taxes and putting forward progressive ideas in what McConnell calls a Trojan horse of infrastructure. Here's what the president said about the corporate tax rate and the degree to which he's open to new ideas.
We're going to raise the corporate tax. It was 35%, which is too high. We all agreed 5 years ago it should go down to 28%, but they reduced it to 21%. We're going to raise it back to up to 28%. No one should be able to complain about that. It's still lower than what that rate was between World War II and 2017. Just doing that one thing will generate $1 trillion in additional revenue over 15 years.
Jim, J.P. Morgan's morning macro note this morning takes a crack at this. They say tax increases appear to be manageable, but it was interesting to hear the president talk about not just tax rates for companies, but specifically Amazon, too, and say that's one firm that needs to be prepared to pay more.
Well, how about the fact that he said, I'm a union man, and they're voting for union. We're still tabulating. Amazon's still tabulating. I was surprised at the Republican reaction. I mean, where was the Reagan get the government off the backs of his people? Where was the outcry about the need for the government to be smaller? It's almost as if they ceded this. I thought that they were much more mellow. Really surprised. Now, it is true that President Trump busted the budget, so maybe they feel like it's inconsistent. But I was they were really they didn't go full force, the Republicans. Are you the Trojan horse? I expected more from McConnell. I expected him to say, look, we can't reverse what Reagan started, because this is a wholesale departure from what's happened for years and years in this country. This is the government getting very big, trying to become maybe 1% of the GDP. And I just think that the Republicans, they were very, let's say, relaxed in their response. Maybe they feel like they have the votes to stop it. I don't know.
That does not seem to be the calculus from what I've read. I mean, Goldman yesterday and a few others say, look, this is probably going to happen through reconciliation. It's probably going to take longer as a result. You might go into the late summer, early fall. And it's going to depend on maintaining the support, Jim, of a number of centrist Democrats who will be highly leveraged to sway the policy in the end.
Well, look, I do think that there were enough goodies in there that the Democrats can go for it. I know that Speaker Pelosi, I think, is going to have no problem, obviously, in the House. But, you know, if we had Senator Manchin on right now from West Virginia, I think he would say we had a huge employment just before the pandemic. We don't necessarily need this. Let's see what happens when everyone gets the vaccine. Because I would say that, remember, pre-pandemic, we were at levels that we hadn't seen since Lyndon Johnson in terms of jobs. I wonder, there's a lot of things in here that I think are incredibly interesting, but you know, the job loss is concentrated in small business and concentrated in restaurants, retail, and that could be easily remedied once we get the vaccine. So I think that there will be a lot of people saying, can we please wait and see? Let's wait and see what the unemployment is. I mean, if unemployment rate drops to 3-4, I don't know if these are good priorities, but I don't know if there are enough people to actually take the jobs.
Right. And that's going to be an issue, Jim. And claims were a little bit surprising this morning, but we're going to see what the jobs number brings us tomorrow. A lot of estimates in the 650. I think Morgan Stanley went to 700K yesterday. You mentioned the vaccine, Jim. There's so much news regarding that. We mentioned Pfizer. They say the vaccine's highly effective, 91% for 6 months. Not a lot of safety concerns. It's better than the 90-day estimate that we've been going with. And they say it's protective against the variant out of South Africa. Then there's J&J, Jim. This mix-up at the factory in Baltimore. AP's got a piece this morning talking about Emergent having sustained multiple citations in production, Jim. It's a bit of a setback.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, so J&J does have the ability to produce 4 to 5 million vaccines, the vials that are needed, I should say, from the Netherlands. But there is 24 million in April was J&J's goal. And so you can see how important Emergent Bio was. I know J&J is positive about the idea that this could be resolved. I also know that the FDA historically has been just mean and tough on this. And I say mean because sometimes they really just feel if there's multiple problems, well, we're not going to let them get away with it. Remember, this is Emergent. You've got J&J people going into the Emergent factory, and you have to hope that maybe the FDA says, okay, now that it's run by J&J, it'll be better. They do have a lot of vaccines ready if the FDA approves, but you know, even just when you look at the history of even J&J, like there's a plant that was a lot of my friends worked at. I was growing up in Fort Washington, PA, that the FDA, they slapped McNeil's plant in Fort Washington with a scalding inspection, causing the company to shutter the factory until 2011, and it took forever to get it open. So I don't know. I would love to be as optimistic as J&J, but Carl, this was a huge part of what I think this country hoped. One vaccine, boom, and we get faster. I think it's going to be a setback to the entire process of getting vaccinated. It's not good. It's
on the flip side, we do have a CVS this morning. They say they administered 10 million doses in the month. They've got capacity for 25 million doses per month, Jim. I know I'm going to a CVS tomorrow to get mine. Oh, I had to laugh because on the tape right now, Fauci says that on the morning shows, I'm not sure I would have said impending doom about the pandemic.
Wow.
On CBS. And then he says that the J&J issue, he says human errors do happen. But we'd been talking about Walensky's comment earlier in the week.
Well, it is true. I mean, I'm glad that he said it is human error. I think that when the J&J people get in, they can make a strong case and say, look, it was Emergent. You know us. We're real good. I'm so glad Fauci said that. I just got the book, the new Stephen King book, later. I find that when I hear impending doom, I keep thinking about The Stand and that Lincoln Tunnel scene, and which always gave me nightmares, which is trying to futilely hold back impending doom. And so it shocked me because I think that you want to do is say, look, it's your patriotic duty to get the shot. And sure, we want to encourage you. And we've got to make sure. But impending doom, well, I mean, we got to leave that to the novels. Holy cow. I mean, King is a great follow, by the way, on Twitter. But I've read almost every single Stephen King book. And when you hear impending doom from a government official, well, let's just say you can't even hide in Maine.
Yeah. Jim, it kind of reminds me of two bits of news we got yesterday from companies that have access to a lot of data and a lot of intelligence. The first one is Amazon, which had a blog post saying that they are looking to return people to offices in the coming months. A return to what they say is an office-centric culture as our baseline. And then there was Google, which, of course, we all remember was one of the first to send workers to remote working. They're going to bring some people back to the office starting in the next month. We're going to talk to Adam Aaron in a minute about movie theaters, but certainly the return to work dynamic is a pretty good tell. I mean, at least it has been.
I think it's a great tell, and I think it's something we have to talk about constantly because it's probably the most important theme right now in our country is when are you going back to work? Are you going back to work, meaning the central office? Nikesh Arora, who's the CEO, he's a brilliant guy. He's the CEO of Palo Alto. He continues to say it's going to be a hybrid office setup, that's what happened. It's hybrid, meaning some days you got to come in and some days you don't. And he thinks that's irreversible. That would be incredible when you think about it. I remember going in at Goldman Sachs, trying to get in at 4 a.m., trying to leave at 11 p.m. to impress people because I was ridiculous. And the idea was that you live at the office. Now, the idea with these young, with the millennials is I'll drop by. Now, they hate that when I say that, Carl. But I do think that the idea of younger people picking and choosing what day they go to work, at which days they stay at home. Now, maybe people say, listen, they have to go to work at 7 a.m. We can just fire up the machines. But those Zoom calls, I think there's people with their eyes closed. I think they're like, and you just have to spot.
Yeah.
Intolerable.
It's true.
I'll outwork any of those 20-year-olds. Give me a break.
Bring him in. That'll wake him up. Jim, we'll take a quick break here. Take another look here at futures. Got a bunch of names to get to in terms of research, including Apple, Uber. Jim mentions Goldman, Carnival, Netflix, and some others as we kick off the month of April. By the way, S&P has not had a losing April since 2012. We're back in a minute.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Back in 1999, when I was made the CEO at Avon, a lot was made of the gender breakthrough. So women in the C-suite, women in the boardroom, women in the CEO job, there was a lot of focus on that, but less so on the fact that I was the first Asian woman. And it really did hit home. I think I was walking through the plant at Avon probably 3 months after I became the CEO, and it was in China. And I was with the general manager and the head of operations, and it was a regular senior management factory tour. And I remember that young women were peering around the corner, looking out as we were walking through. And it really did hit me that, you know, the eight previous CEOs of a women's cosmetic company had been white men, and that for them, it was someone that looked like them, and that you could actually start at the bottom and make it all the way up to the top.
It's Andrea Jung last night talking about race and opportunity in our ongoing series of specials, Race and Opportunity in America, Jim. Wow, what a remarkable set of interviews last night.
Yes, the Box CEO was just inspirational. Mr. Wang, who just said, look, I would go to companies and the top people never looked like me. I mean, when you hear things like that, you say, geez, it's 2021. How is that possible? And I think that Andrea Jung, when she talks about these consumer product companies, yeah, sure, Clorox has a woman at the helm, and that's terrific, Ms. Rendell. But I question who buys most of these products? It's women. I really think that how can you not be thinking, you know what, it's time. And Ben O'Dwyer, who's at Clorox, I know he thought it was time. And I think that Ms. Rendell has a really good handle on what people want. I remember when Mr. Taylor from Procter & Gamble talked about how he was going to add women to the board, young women to the board. And I said, like, well, about time. I mean, how does it happen, Carl, that these things are so late? They're just late. What went on?
I think the CEOs themselves are asking that same question, Jim. This is what Che Wong of Box said last night about being a leader who happens to be a member of a specific race. Take a listen to this.
Being at big companies before, when you kind of look up and kind of see people who no one in leadership positions looking like you, you realize that, wait, you question yourself, am I playing a rigged game? Am I playing something that there's going to be no winner that looks like me? And so really breaking out and going straight to the top by starting our own company and starting my own company has been one of the ways that I've kind of shortcut to the top. It's hard work, but now being at the top, I think it does set that tone.
Our thanks to those executives, Jim, for being so honest and candid. At least they're in a position now where they can start to ask these kinds of questions as opposed to not being in the C-suite at all.
Yes, and they've got to bring all conversations should have Amy Chang in it. She's the woman that Dave Taylor said has made a difference at Procter. You know, Stanford's, you know, a computer scientist, sold a company to Chuck Robbins at Cisco. It's so brilliant. I sit there and I learn from her. I mean, I have lunch and I learn from her. And she's a good friend of my wife. And I just feel like, well, how come Amy Chang's not running whatever company she wants? I'm sure she will. But the reason I think about it is I do think that there's discrimination, Carl. I think you got to use the word that there's discrimination. And it's, to me, it's institutional. It's not against individuals. It's institutional. And anything like last night's program, and I'm so proud of it. And I told Melissa Lee, you know, whatever we could do to promote, because it was just extraordinary. So I love what we did as a network, Carl. This is what we got to do.
Yep. Yeah, we were proud of last night's programming, and we look forward to people getting a chance to watch what aired last night, maybe online. Take a break here as we kick off Q2. Don't go anywhere.
Let's get straight to the point. You want to grow your portfolio to fight rising costs of inflation or pay off your debt or anything standing in the way of you and financial freedom, right? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, can help. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been helping great investors like you. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking for tips, Yahoo Finance makes it super easy by putting all the tools and data you need in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and more. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. That's how Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you take a look at your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective is what great investors need. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Get a mad dash with Jim, who's watching a little MU.
Yes, Carl, there are so many titan CEOs in the semiconductor business. We talk about, I do not talk about Sanjay Mehrotra enough. A tour de force conference call last night. Micron is basically, I'm going to use the term allocation on DRAMs. The demand is just extraordinary, as we keep hearing. And by the way, they flash, which had been kind of middling, is now getting tight. Maybe that's why they might be interested in this Japanese company. Kioxia, if I pronounce it wrong, I apologize, which has NAND, it's worth about $30 billion. But the conference call was just incredible. Every single part of their lineup, everything they sell into, whether it be PCs or whether it be data centers, or anybody that needs a micro, Micron's basically the building block of all devices, it's just overwhelming them with demand. And this is really the big American fab company now. I would have said at one point it was Intel. And I've got to hand it to these guys. They are going to have a hard time. Now, in the conference call, the questions are now beginning to be subtly about whether there's going to be so much capital equipment money being spent that will we get back to the boom bust, where there'll be a tipping point where just when Micron has the most demand, you'd think that it's going to go to the moon, that there'll be so many chips hitting. I'm not worried about that yet, Carl, and I can't wait to speak to him tonight. Wow, this is the golden moment for semiconductors. It's just the golden moment.
So, Jim, I want to pin you down on price, because today RBC goes to 120,
right.
JPM 140, Rosenblatt's 165. How much of this does the street already know?
Look, great question. I think that the issue here is that we didn't know that NAND, that flash was as strong as it is. But I think that those price targets, this thing is a juggernaut when it gets going. But I would say when the stock was at 35, Mr. Mehrotra came on Mad Money and said, listen, this could be a juggernaut. It's going to get going. I mean, 92, well, I liked it when he made the 35 call. 92, I think that you're going to have a lot of upside. But I don't know if I want to go up 70%. I wouldn't make that call.
Yeah. Then you got Ford. I mean, sort of related story. Is going to shut down production on 6 lines for about 2 weeks. We heard from PACCAR yesterday, Jim, on some Q1 deliveries going to be impacted by about 3,000. I mean, the auto business seems to be dealing with it. We heard GM say it's not going to impact their numbers for the year.
Well, I do think that there's a possibility that some, and that was really quick, Mary Barr really tore the force that she did that. But I will say that this is actually solvable. I think you're going to hear this, the auto part, I think will be solvable by Q3. They'll get that done. It's just that there's just a never-ending demand. I wonder if when people start coming back to the office, when you have to no longer have to build home offices, there could be some let-up. But, Carl, right now, it's just extraordinary demand. Extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the S&P 500 and a look at the opening bell on this first day of April at the big board celebrating an IPO. It's real estate brokerage Compass. Congratulations to them. And over at the NASDAQ, it's also an IPO. Frontier Airlines, Jim. As we're starting to see more entrants in the aviation space.
Well, Phil LeBeau has been talking about the strength of the numbers. I know that our guest is going to be on soon, Adam Aron. I know from a mutual friend of ours, Jeff Sonnenfeld. They're taking a plane this weekend. I told Jeff, listen, every seat will be filled. They're going to Florida. Every seat. I mean, it is like, you know, this is an extremely filled plane and you can't put your bags away. I mean, you're starting to hear that same language. And 3 months ago, you did not hear that. I think that there are many airlines that need more planes. And I think it's going to surprise you. I think that people are going to travel like mad. I don't even care about the business traveler. I know the business traveler flies up front. But I think that this is when you ask people what they're going to do when they got their vaccine, they want to go somewhere. Obviously, they want to go to Disney World. The numbers were just OK for Disney World. But I do think that it's just another it's going to be an obsession to travel. Obsession. And I, by the way, I think, Carl, when Europe opens up and it will open up, I think they'll come here. I think that there'll be tourism, even though the dollar is very strong. So I'm very bullish on tourism. By the way, remember Adam Aron, we're going to have one from AMC. He ran Starwood. He ran Vail. There's so much to talk to him about. Mm-hmm. But boy, did he ever understand the consumer of good times. And he'll be a delight, as he always is.
You are not kidding, Jim. So many things he can address, not capital raising and all the rest. By the way, Jim, really quick before we bring him in, I did notice that United yesterday said that domestic leisure demand, in their words, has almost entirely recovered from the COVID era. And then you had Calhoun. We mentioned his appearance at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, but he did say that he believes when vaccines reach about 50 to 70% distribution, that's, in his view, at Boeing anyway, where they think things can return to normal.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, if I were an airline, I'd go now when you get that Southwest air price. I mean, that's the price you want. And I think it is it's kind of like that price in that State Farm where, I want the Rogers price. That's what they're getting.
Southwest. Yes, yes.
Love that ad. Well, let's bring them in. All right, we got the moment here, Carl. We've got a CNBC exclusive, AMC Entertainment's president and CEO, Adam Aron, a great CEO. I'm not just saying that because at one point he was the CEO of the Sixers. He's done many, many good things. So let's cut right to it, Adam. You got, $5 billion in debt.
Good morning.
Yeah, I got to do the good morning thing. You got $5 billion in debt. Can you solve it? That's a lot of debt.
I would like to think so. AMC has proven quite adept over the past year at raising capital. One of the reasons that we have survived this horrible pandemic so far is we raised $2.8 billion of cash and got another $1 billion of concessions from lenders and theater landlords. And that's put us in a position to run our business going forward with some degree of confidence. You know, five different times during the last year, we were close to running out of cash because our theaters were all closed and we had no revenues. But we raised money to survive, and we're back operating as normal companies operate. And let me just tell you, you talked about good morning. Let me tell you what good morning means in America these days. The combination of vaccinations and new movie releases. Godzilla versus Kong opened last night. It's a movie about apes. In the world of meme stops, apes a good thing. Maybe it's an omen. Our attendance last night was about 10 times what it's been all the other Wednesdays so far in 2021.
Geez, that's
so we can look ahead.
But at the same time, you got a stock. It's up 380%. I don't know, Adam. I mean, this is a good opportunity to sell a couple hundred million shares, isn't it?
Well, I want to be careful.
Well, it's natural distribution. This is where you do it now. It's not the times. It's here.
Yeah, well, dilution is something we care about. But I would also tell you that we are formally asking for approval from our shareholders to authorize another 500 million shares that the company could issue if it wishes. There are a lot of benefits to our shareholders of having more authorized shares out in the market. We'll be sensitive to dilution issues. At the same time, though, there's an opportunity to bolster our cash reserves. There's an opportunity to buy back debt at a discount. There might be an opportunity to defray some of our deferred theater rents, settling with stock instead of with cash. Maybe there's some merger and acquisition opportunity where we could buy other companies inexpensively using our stock as a currency. There are a lot of good reasons for shareholders to give us the authority to have more shares.
Isn't it time to buy back?
In our toolkit.
Don't we buy back the 6 3/8 of 11/15/24 that are trading at 36? I mean, that's a great piece of paper right now if you're going to do if you're going to do 500 million shares.
We are very well aware that we could buy back debt at a discount, and that in itself would be accretive and generate profitability for AMC and increase shareholder value for our shareholders.
All right, if you get that money, is it time to play hardball again? I mean, Black Widow, Cruella, I don't know. If I can go to AMC or I can go to Disney Plus, I don't know, Disney Plus is a lot of fun to watch at home, even though I love the popcorn. I love the social distancing. I mean, can you, if you get the capital, can't you say to these guys, you know what? Look, we're not playing by your rules. We're open. And we want those with a 2-month exclusivity.
Well, look, I think one of the biggest benefits of AMC being the largest exhibitor in the world is that we have a seat at the table, and we're in active discussions with movie studios all the time. We consider them our partners in this ecosystem of the release of movies. We've been discussing windows policies for years. Some of those discussions are very easy. Some of those discussions are heated, as you say. There was a lot of drama around theatrical windows starting last April. That continued this January and continues apace. But as I said, we've got a seat at the table because we're an important player. And so far, we've been able to reach agreement with studios on mutually agreeable terms, what we think are good terms for the studios, but also, very importantly, good terms for us and for AMC shareholders.
Adam, I don't want to belabor this point, but Jim's question is so key. You know, Black Widow, among some, was seen as a bit of a large tell about the window because they held their cards earlier in the year. Then they finally push it back 2 months. But as Jim says, you can get it at home. And a lot's been written about the fact that Disney didn't really do exhibitors any favors. Do you agree with that?
Well, look, I'd rather not comment publicly about what Disney is doing or isn't doing or what their strategy is and what their strategy isn't. I will tell you that Disney and AMC, as two companies, have been very close partners for decades and decades. I expect to be very close partners with Disney for decades and decades to come. I'm not worried about the competition from the home. Godzilla versus Kong was available at home on some streaming services, and almost 250,000 people were at our theaters last night, just in the United States alone, on a Wednesday. That's a good omen. People, you know, if this pandemic has taught us anything, people want to get out of their houses and their apartments. And going to a movie theater is something that people have done for more than a century. It's a cheap date. It's a cheap night out. And it's a very nice break from being cooped up in your in where you live 24/7.
I couldn't agree more, Adam. To me, it is the date. I mean, the dinner, I got a restaurant. But the date is to go to the movies. Now, you have you talk about partners. You have a very interesting partner in the people who are on Reddit at Wall Street Bets. And I know that you earlier said that you find it so appealing about the Reddit phenomena is the affection and allegiance that Americans have across the country. And you really point blank say that it's really terrific that millions and millions of people rally behind saving AMC. So I don't know. I think they could rally behind 500 million shares.
Well, look, Jim, you know, Save AMC was a hashtag that was trending on Twitter as the single most tweeted hashtag one of those days in January. Look, there are a lot of things going on with the so-called Reddit phenomenon, but I think one of them is there are a lot of people out there who have an affection for AMC who did not want to see hedge funds short our stock and try to force us into bankruptcy, and they stood by our side, and we appreciate that. And now as we go forward, we want to run this company right. These people are now our shareholders, and we want to do what's best for our shareholders, increase long-term shareholder value. And as you said, one of the smartest ways we can do that right now is increase the available share count at AMC and then use those shares wisely, not over the next week and the next month or even the next year, but over the next 5 weeks and 5 months and 5 years, 10 weeks and 10 months and 10 years.
You, Adam, you read my mind. Last question. I felt the shorts were trying to just drive you out of business. I thought the shorts were taking the stock down, creating some level of fear, and then making it so that the bonds rolled over, making it hard for you to be able to raise money. You hit upon what I think was actual truth about the shorts.
Look, I do. There clearly were people who were campaigning to force us to run dry on cash. Once you get in this cycle of approaching insolvency, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. And most companies who get in that zone wind up having to file. By contrast, because of the confidence in AMC and our future by retail investors, we sold over $800 million worth of stock in December and January alone. And we raised a lot of money. We bolstered our cash reserves. And we, as I said in a press statement in mid-January, we took near-term imminent bankruptcy completely off the table. Now, with vaccinations moving at a very brisk pace, with new movie releases coming, with people coming back to theaters in quantity again, as was the case last night with Godzilla versus Kong, and will, we think, be the case with other new movies that are released in April and May and June and July. We've got a brighter future.
All right, I just want to be sure. There's a little ticker that said that it was $500 million. I thought I heard 500 million shares.
My experience is that Jim Cramer is never wrong, and you are correct. Okay. We have asked our shareholders for approval for 500 million new shares to be authorized. That doesn't mean we'll use all those shares right away, but it does give the company optionality and flexibility. And optionality and flexibility when you're navigating these uncharted waters of the pandemic are very good things.
Well, I want to congratulate you. I know it was five times. Fabulous article in the New York Times about you. You are a fighter. The only thing I'm bummed about, you gave me no Churchill. How about you gave me no Churchill, Adam?
I did in the middle of the dire times when we were tight on cash on an earnings call, as you're alluding. I quoted the famous "We'll fight them on the beaches," Churchill speech, saying that AMC was in a wartime mentality. We were not going to let hedge funds or short sellers take us out. And we were going to go throw everything that we had at saving AMC. And we think that's exactly what we've done. Now, we're not totally out of the woods yet. We still need more vaccinations to come. We need more movies to be released. We do need to see a return to normalcy in the United States.
Right.
But as we look ahead, we think the odds are much better that that will be the outcome.
Well, I want to thank Adam Houdini, Aaron, who has piloted, and people should read this Times profile. A lot of people would have given up. You not only took on the shorts, but you just are going to be the winner and maybe even the last man standing. Have a great time in Florida with Jeff Sonnenfeld this weekend.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, guys.
Back to you, Carl.
Jim, don't go anywhere. I need you for the rest of the hour, because as we've been talking to Adam Aaron, got a new milestone on the S&P, S&P 4000, less than 2 years, Jim, since it crossed 3000 for the first time as we kick off a new month. How much of this do you think is calendar effects?
Well, I do think April is historically very strong. A lot of money coming in from stimulus checks this week. And I think it's going into the stock market because the stock market is proving to be pretty much of a winner. Great to see that even after the Viacom fiasco, the money came in. I was so fearful. Jay Clayton talked about very smart this morning about when he, former SEC chairman, was saying, listen, people should have gotten in earlier and they want more education and they know that. It was a clarion call, good message. I'm glad that people didn't desert the stock market, Carl. There's a lot of money being made.
Yes, indeed, Jim. The question is whether or not it continues to revolve around a rotation or whether or not we can ride the same kinds of trades that got us here in the last 1,000 points or whether it's a mix of the two.
A little bit of a mix. I still would. The cyclical is going to have the best numbers when we see them. The SPACs have hurt what I think is this kind of the great growth cohort. I noticed Cathie Wood getting a lot of money in. And if there's 500 million shares of AMC and the stock's only down 50 cents, of course, he's not going to do it all at once, Carl. That's a pretty telling sign that the market's got resilience.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great interview and perfect timing to have Adam Aaron on. Speaking of data, we're going to get some PMI numbers here. Let's get to Rick Santelli. Rick.
Yes, this is the first of two PMIs. Of course, this is the PMI for market. We'll have the ISM coming in a bit from the ISM people. We have 59.1, which is like exactly what we expected. And if you take the 59.0, that was the mid-March read, that now becomes, of course, 59.1. It is the second highest post-COVID number. Beginning of the year, January, we had 59.2. And as I said, ISM will be coming up at top of the hour. Let's look at an intraday chart of tens. You can clearly see that this morning, the slight reversal in jobless claims, instead of moving lower, they inched up just a smidge. But the market was very cognizant of that. And do keep in mind, if you look at a three-day chart of tens, being a technician, we are now under the last 2 days' lows. And that is very key, because if you open the chart up to early March, you could see that that 160 mark is going to be key. Listen, I think that we have an interim top here. It might not last long, but I think we're going to test lower levels. Maybe one of the catalysts, of course, is, you know, sometimes appropriating money is good. Stock market seems to like it. But at the end of the day, we're creating an awful lot of debt, and there may be a bit of indigestion. And I think at least with respect to the Treasury complex, losing a little bit of that, they think the economy is going to be going gangbusters. There's no productivity in this infrastructure bill that's coming, no matter how much it's posted as such. Look at Japan's infrastructure bills. No productivity ended up there, and corporate tax is going up. You know, if the reason rates were going up is because of excitement about the U.S. economy, raising corporate taxes has to be the anti-excitement factor thrown into the equation. The dollar index also, remember, rates have been going up. Nobody really expected that. Dollar's been going up for sure. Not many investors expected that. So if you look at 1 week of the dollar, you can see if we start to slip and close under 93 even, we're going to lose momentum there, very similar to the 10-year charts. If you look at a two-day of the euro versus the dollar, if they start to trade and close above that 117.60 level, yesterday's high, because much of the strength in the dollar has been weakness in the euro, and in my opinion, the infrastructure bill puts us at a more equal footing, taking away some of the U.S. economic advantage, at least in the near term. Jim and Carl, back to you.
All right, Rick, we'll see in a bit for ISM and construction spend at the top of the hour. We'll take a break here as we get S&P 4K for the first time. And if you missed the headline a moment ago, AMC, we had Adam Aron on a few moments ago. It's not an offer, but it is asking shareholders to approve an offer of 500 million shares. Stock's down 5%. We're back in a moment. Get to a final stop trading for the week, Jim.
Well, you got the hot one, Micron. And I think that Sanjay's going to tell a pretty great story. And then we have QuantumScape. They got that big deal from Volkswagen. And I just think that that is going to be so much fun because it's one of the few EVs, when we listened to the president last night, that you really want to talk to because they have the fastest battery. And that's what people need. These cars cost too much. And I think that Jagdeep is going to be able to make a statement that, wait a second, these cars are coming down in price. I think that's fabulous. Just fabulous. I first saw Jagdeep when David interviewed him. I said, that's the guy. That's the guy who's going to make it so that EVs are going to be cheaper than gasoline, than internal combustion engines. So I can't wait to speak to him. He's a genius.
Wow. That is good. That's good stuff, Jim, as it has been all week long. I did want to get you briefly on Goldman. Because UBS today does cut it to neutral. They talk about volumes obviously being elevated above historical trend. But their broader point, Jim, is that Fed policy appears to be heating up just marginally on this SLR, and that Goldman, in their words, is very sensitive to regulatory risk, and they go to neutral.
Well, I think let's put it this way. It's been the best. And it doesn't surprise me that someone wants to go to neutral because it has been unbelievable. But I recognize that all these firms have to have one whipping boy in a day. I could have said that about – the reason I say this is because think about what happened with Archegos. You know, Goldman got rid of the stuff very, very quickly. They were the fastest. Of course, J.P. Morgan knew not to do business with them at all. But I just feel like that the guy who got fastest to dump that extra stock did a pretty good job. David Solomon doing a good job.
Yeah.
It still only sells at 10 times earnings. It's not expensive.
We didn't really get to it yesterday, but there was a bunch of headlines on Archegos. S&P cut the outlook for CS. Wells had said they're not experiencing any losses. And then J.P. Morgan had a chart, Jim, about hedge fund leverage in general.
It's terrible.
And while it is a little higher than it has been in recent years, their argument was nowhere near the levels that we saw on LTCM.
Well, I would say that was a very reckless individual, reckless firm. And that is actually not the norm that I see. By the way, watch Wynn. The Cal numbers were extraordinary. That stock's not up enough on the Cal numbers that came out last night.
Yeah, Macau up 58% off of weak comps. But
right.
That's a nice year-on-year
and
gain.
How's that AMC doing?
Good weekend.
Yes, have a great weekend. You too, Carl. Thank you.
We'll see you Monday. We're back in a minute.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.